You're tuning in to the Black Hollywood Live Network, featuring news, interviews, and commentary on all things Black Hollywood. Hollywood redefined. From Los Angeles, California, presented by Maria Menounos and streaming live thanks to Akamai Technologies. This is Black Hollywood Live Portraits, featuring intimate, in-depth interviews with Black Hollywood stars and influencers. Black Hollywood Live, Hollywood redefined.
You're listening to Black Hollywood Live.
And now, the host for Black Hollywood Live Portraits, Dario Kristen.
Hey, what's up, everybody? You're watching Black Hollywood Live Portraits. I'm your host, Dario Kristen, and here joining me in the studio today is Courtney Stewart.
Hello, everybody.
DJ Jesse J.
What's up?
And our special guest that we are super excited about. You know him from the cult classic, The Last Dragon. He's a martial arts artist guru. He's an actor. He's a legend. Ty Mock is in the house with us today.
Woo! Welcome, welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure to be here. This place is awesome.
We just gave him the full tour, so he's like pretty impressed with the studio setup.
That's right. TMZ needs to come down here.
TMZ needs to get here.
We do not need TMZ up in here.
Yeah.
Now, we were just talking about Europe, and I know that as a young kid, that's you kind of spent some of your time there in Europe and in New York. How did you get introduced into the business?
Well, my parents, you know, my mother worked at the Apollo when she was a kid, and her friends were people like Sam Cooke, Jackie Wilson, and, you know, all of them, James Brown. And my father, he's Italian, he was a singer, a doo-wop. And they were already involved with that community and in that community. And I got into it. It was kind of a thing that, you know, kind of martial arts was my passion as a kid. Because my brother used to beat me up all the time. So we both did martial arts, but I stuck with it. And when I saw Bruce Lee, it really impassioned me to really get into it even deeper and take it more seriously. But the entertainment industry, I got in kind of through the martial arts and when I got The Last Dragon.
Did you, with your family being so into music, did they ever try to push you into that direction at all?
Well, my father wasn't singing, my mother wasn't, they were all, it was almost like my mother was a socialite. She was friends with all these people,
okay.
You know? So it wasn't so much that my father was a singer, but they were more, when my mother and father met, my father didn't sing anymore, he was more, he was a salesman, and my parents were just in that community. So I just met all of them when I was a kid, you know, James Brown, David Bowie, all these people,
wow.
You know? Yeah, when I was a little kid.
What are some of your best memories of meeting? I mean, these were David
Huge.
Bowie.
Yeah, I'm like,
James
yeah,
Brown.
Right.
Do you remember?
Them,
did you know
them. I danced on stage with James Brown when I was six.
Oh,
you know?
Wow.
My mother used to cook for him. She was a chef, my mother, soul food chef. I was at Woodstock when I was a little kid. I remember naked people running around, loud music, you know. I didn't know they were on drugs, but, but they must have been. All of that. It was a big, beautiful, it's artwork, you know. It was like artwork. Zoe Bowie was David Bowie's son, and my mother used to spend a lot of time hanging out with Angie Bowie, which was his wife back at the time in the early 70s. And I remember I wanted to hang out with his son, and they told me to go wake David up. And I went in his room and woke him up, and he actually does have two different color eyes, and I remember that. You know, he was a nice,
that's what he was known
really
for,
nice,
yeah. And people used to always
nice
think
guy.
That was fake, you know,
right.
That he had a contact in. That's
right, right.
Now, since you lived in both places, Europe and New York, did you have one as a kid that you enjoyed a little bit more than the other? Or, I mean,
yeah,
both so
I enjoyed
different.
Europe more, but there are things about America that you can't touch, you know. It's just it's a certain level of dream. I think America is more like the dream place,
yeah.
You know, and Europe is more like the dream.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like, that's more my take on it, you know?
Yeah. And then you said Bruce Lee was pretty influential in your life growing up. Did you want to emulate his career as a kid and be like, you know?
Yeah, everybody did. Yeah. Everybody, even non-martial arts. Women were like, wow, you know, that whole thing. He was a genius, you know, he was a genius of martial arts and he was very charismatic. And he was the first person to really break that boundary, you know, that racism that was going on. And
yeah.
He was the first one to really break it. And he broke right through it. You know, he became a top box office draw And he was Asian.
Yeah.
He changed when they the game were doing completely. All that hee hee ha 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 right. goofy stuff yeah. with Asian people, he and was like, "No, dubs. We could be cool too."
And yeah. then Jim Kelly was he was influenced by Bruce Lee, and they were really close friends as well. Was he someone who you emulated, especially with him being an African American martial
yes,
artist?
He was a great looking guy, and we saw him in Enter the Dragon, and he was just phenomenal. He had the whole classic line, "I'll be too busy looking good," right. you know. And then I saw the Black Dragon, which I was a, we didn't train together for many years, but I just did a event. Ron Van Cleef, actually, Ron Van Cleef, yeah. the Grandmaster, Ron Van Cleef. I trained with him all through my youth, and there was a fantastic expo in New York that I was honored with. Ron Van Cleef, Michael Jai White, Michelle Hu. Ben Ramsey, the writer Ben Ramsey, and Fred the Hammer Williams.
Oh wow!
So that was an event thrown by Demetrius Angelo, and it was fantastic because they were recognizing black and other cultures in indie action films especially. So look out for it in the future. I think it's going to be something special. It doesn't happen in New York very often, anything like that, or anywhere that I know of.
After training under Ron Van Cleef, what were some of like the most key things that you learned from him?
If you feel, don't let them hit you first. he was a master fighter. You know, he was from the military, and he was an amazing athlete as well. These days there are more athletics and martial arts, but back in when he was coming up in the 70s, 60s and 70s, he focused more on the athletic side and the strength and conditioning side than other martial artists, you know. And I was impressed with the training, and it was like the military.
Yeah.
But his bottom line is never give up, you know. And that stuck, you know.
Never give up.
You know, he had a lot of heart, you know, as... You had a lot of heart, you know, a lot of, so you just, there's, it's not in our blood, you know? Yeah. And I look at it as, rather than saying never give up, I say, see the light, see it. It's right there. It's like there's an image I have of a guy with a pitchfork underneath the ground.
Oh, yeah.
And you see him trying to break through, and then he gives up. And on the other side, there's a whole bunch of diamonds. And you get an image of him walking away. And that's how it is in life that, you know, a lot of people give up right before the treasure or the victory, you know?
That's true.
Is there something that you is there a time where you as a martial artist, it's a very disciplined activity, so were there, as a kid, was there any times where it was kind of like, I don't know if I want to do this anymore? And what was it that kind of kept you pushing?
It was never. I couldn't get enough of it, you know luckily I found what I love, you know. Mm-hmm. and you know, I think that's what everybody can find that, you know. I think, you just have to find, even if you don't know what it is, just, find out things that make you feel good. Hopefully they're not something that's bad.
I like cocaine.
Right.
That makes you feel good.
Right. Well. A little crack, maybe.
No, but you find something, it could even be that way. I love hanging around the park, and then maybe something in that arena, that field that, you could be, in that field, something around that. Or, when I see water, I just feel, invigorated. Mm-hmm. So, you don't have to find a specific, career, but if you find something that, you love, that you really, then you'll connect with it.
Yeah.
And that's what I found that early when I was a kid, I just fell in love with martial arts. And my brother was with my butt all the time, so that was another reason.
Helpful. And it probably kept you out of a lot of trouble, so much discipline that's involved with martial arts and just the training of it. I have several friends who were involved with it as well, and they were different than all the other kids. I mean, it was almost like they were mature beyond their age just because of the fact that they had so much extensive training.
Yeah, it was tough for me because I grew up in the disco era. And there were so many great places in New York City at that time that you're like 15, 16, and you're like a kid jumping around, and you're so happy to be, you had Chaka Khan, you had Dinah Ross, you had every, star that you can think of that are just at their prime, showing up at these clubs, you know. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, Luther Vandross with the band called I forgot the name of the band. Anyway, he was part of a group, and there were so many people back then performing in these clubs, and there were lines around the block. So, but I did, you know, it's funny because a lot of the bouncers and the security in clubs were martial artists. So
makes sense.
We would train sometimes in the club, in the basement, and we go out and dance. And it was just, it was something, you know.
That's a night. That's staying in shape.
Self-defense, too. You know, they hired me to bounce in clubs when I was a kid. It was crazy.
Now, you moved from Europe back to New York, and then you won the New York State Kickboxing Championship.
Yeah.
Now, how did that feel to get that recognition right?
Well, you know? Yeah, it was. I was very nervous because the guy came from Philly, and he was, you know, I didn't have a lot of money, and I didn't have money to get all these beautiful outfits, and you know, you got the trainer and the cut man, all these guys. And, you know, when I came out, I just had my, my kickboxing pants, and the gloves were on me, and warming up with a towel. And when he came out, his whole crew were decked out. And I said, oh, man, these guys are real professional. And, you know, he must have, like, the best trainers. And so, you know, that's what happens. You know, your mind starts to go to places, and you know, doubt starts to seep in. But when we came out, we were slugging at each other, like going crazy, trying to knock each other out. And in the middle of that, I said to myself, one of us is going to get knocked out because we're just giving everything we can. And, you know, one of us, chin can't take all that.
Right.
So I backed away, and he kept coming at me, but I bounced off the ropes, put my foot on his chest, dropped off his chest, and knocked him out with a right hand. So, and that was like, you know, it felt amazing.
In other words, I don't want to fight you in the alley.
I don't fight. Actually, I don't fight at all, actually. I haven't had a fight in dozens of years. Dozens.
People know who you are. Yeah,
exactly.
So. Yeah, but there's people out there that carry weapons.
That's true.
Obviously, this is a small enough space for you not to do it, but do you have a favorite move that you like? For me, growing up, there were artists like, mine was more Power Rangers, but there were, I know, because like, I'm serious.
I was Walter the Black Kid in Power Rangers the other day. We were at a signing at the convention. Yeah.
So is there a move that, it was the bicycle kick that I always was drawn to? Is there a move that you always wanted to learn that you were able to accomplish later?
Well, back then we were working on switch kicks and three kicks in the air, like you do a split kick, finish with a round kick, and I used to do those.
Why don't you give us a sample? Go ahead.
Yeah, with these ripped up jeans. Yeah, I might as well rip them some more, right?
Or
like a power punch.
Well, you know, Bruce Lee used to make the one inch punch very popular. Right after you do it for many years, you're just applying, like right now, this style of Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, I'm just trying to make that more my own. You know, I'm in the beginning stages doing it a few years and just trying to find my way with it. So I haven't picked any. That's been absorbing me the most right now, and I haven't picked a specific technique. But one of the things I'm working on is being better from the bottom, which is most cats want to be on top and apply pressure to the person that's on the bottom trying to defend themselves. Mm-hmm. Because on the bottom, it's very it's much more difficult because the cat is putting all his weight on you, and so forth. So. You know, that's what I'm working at. I looked at that as being an advantage. Once you really learn how to defend yourself from the bottom, then you'll feel much more free. Mm-hmm. So that's what I'm focusing on right now.
And as far as, like, kind of going from different styles, is it harder almost, like, when you become so good at one style to kind of switch your gears and to learn something like now jiu-jitsu? So is it difficult with certain types of movement or...
Yeah, for me, martial arts and is when I was younger, it was more of an ego thing. It was more like, I want to be the best fighter. I want to be strong. I want to look good. Now it's more, it's a spiritual journey. So learning a new style allows me to be vulnerable. So that I can apply that in my life, you know, that I don't know everything, mm-hmm. you know, because the ego is very tricky. You know, you start becoming better and better at something before you know it. It seeps into other areas of your life.
That's true.
So it keeps you down to earth. It keeps you real, you know. So I'm training in a new style. All these young cats, and you know, there are times where I get frustrated because these guys have been training maybe 10 years and they're amazing, and I'm like, wow, this move, I'm having a tough time with it, and you know, and Marcelo goes, yeah, the bottom is the hardest part. And he just smiles and laughs. I want to grab my thing. Yeah, yeah. He's been doing it so long, you know. He said, yeah, the bottom's the hardest part to get. And he walks away. And he laughs at me. So it's fun. Yeah, yeah. Good luck. Good luck. Go, keep working on it. Time
keep trying that.
I like it. Yeah, I wish I had you with the stand-up stuff for a good amount of time so you can see how that hard that is. But yeah, yeah. For me, it's just allowing me to practice being vulnerable. And the benefits is I'm learning something brand new.
And how much time? Courtney, go ahead.
I was just curious. You said that at this point, it's sort of more of a spiritual journey for you as opposed to just, you know, wanting to look good and make the move. What was sort of the catalyst for that change for you?
Growing up and seeing that that's a priceless endeavor, you know, to have an opportunity to put your ego to the side, you know, because when you're able to do that, then you're able to engage in something bigger than yourself. That's where all the juice is.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, you know, it's like the whole, you know, cliche with the cup half empty vis-a-vis the cup full. Yeah. You know, when you think you know everything, there's nothing you can learn. Yeah. You know, so that's kind of the spiritual journey I'm taking. I want to learn more. That's what's great about life is there's so much to learn. You know, if you think you know everything, then you might as well just kick it out right now and say, let me go in my coffin.
And how much training does it take for you, like a week for each week? How much time are you in the gym, and how much stuff are you doing every day? How many
with
hours?
Marcelo's spot, I started to see the guys, the 19-year-olds coming in twice a day, and I said, damn. And it was funny because I was in the locker room, and one of the kids was like, I said, man, I'm in my late 40s. I don't need to be doing no twice a day. He's like, he's like, what are you making excuses? He was like 20 years old. He's like, man, you're 20. I was like, you're 20. And then you know, I said, you know what? I can do anything. What am I talking about? Yeah. I'm the dragon.
You are the dragon.
So I started doing twice a day. And then I came up to him. I said, you know, it's funny. You were ragging with me, and you're getting on my nerves telling me I could do twice a day, no problem. And then I started training. I said, thank you. He said, oh, he goes, that's funny. I was just teasing you. Yeah, so thank you, Diego.
Diego made it happen.
Yeah.
Now, you went on to do The Last Dragon, which we talked about a little bit earlier, which was a cult classic, one of my favorite movies.
Thank you.
And had a lot of success. I mean, you worked with Vanity, Prince's protege from Vanity 6. Mm-hmm. Barry Gordy was the executive producer and found you, actually, correct? He handpicked you for the role, from what I understand. What was it like to work with Barry Gordy?
It was very interesting. You know, he's... you know, when you meet a tycoon or someone that's at the top of their field, there's always it's always interesting to me, you know. So he took me under his wing. He made me family, you know, and you meet all the different Motown artists, you know, hanging out with Diana Ross, you know, watching TV, and then there's Smokey Robinson's over there, you know, you got the Four Tops, you know, and you're goofing around with all these people, and you know, it was just interesting. It was interesting, you know. And then I did recognize the talent he had. You know, Michael Schultz directed the movie. I had a lot of contact with Barry Gordy, and he had a lot of talent in recognizing, like you know, the gold, and he could tell talent. You know, he was very good at picking talent.
The glow, he recognized the glow.
I guess so.
Now. Did you know at the time you didn't have a lot of acting experience? Mm-hmm. Was there a lot of pressure? Did you feel pressure to be leading this major film, especially with, you know, with Barry Gordy and even Vanity at the time, who was pretty big? Mm-hmm. Was there pressure for you being a young, I think you would say you were around 20 years old?
19, yeah. 19. Yeah. Going on 20. Yeah, it was a lot of pressure. You know, imagine you're 19 and all of a sudden you get the lead role in a major motion picture. And they don't hire guys to play, you know, superheroes like that. And even today, you know, you don't get it.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
And then you're starring opposite, you know, the hot, you know, whatever, whatever. And then you got guys that hate you for it. They just hate you. They hate you. I hate that guy. And I'm like, oy vey, too bad. No. It was just the pressure was taking on a character that you were like, what the hell is this guy?
Yeah.
You know? I mean, I do not wish to do this. I do not wish to do that. It was like very, couldn't make it my own. Mm-hmm. And then they got an acting coach with me. And then I finally started, you know, just having fun with it. You know, I'm just doing the character. I mean, I still, when I was doing it, I didn't get it with the depth I have now. You know, it was really interesting.
Was it hard to go out after that? You became so popular and did people mistake you for your character in the sense that they thought that you were your character in real life?
Not exactly, because New York is sophisticated when it comes to filmmaking and all that stuff. So we lived in New York, you know, me and my family. But they did. They were like, you know, wow. This, you know, when people would meet me, it was, you know, I was kind of popular in high school, but it was a whole nother level when you step out and Rick James sees you in a party. He goes, "Timok, get your ass over here, boy. Did you know this nigga is?" You know, and I'm like, this is Rick James screaming at me. And I don't want to say, he said, "B.I.T.J., get your, come over here. You know who this man is." He was driving crazy. You know, so those kind of things would happen. And I'd be like, okay. You know, and then you get all the, you know, the groupies and con artists and everything starts to come over because you're supposed to be the new thing. And, mm-hmm. You know, and I've never experienced anything like that. It was very strange. I just turned 20, so it was very, I didn't know what to make out of it.
I think you need a T-shirt now because, all I have in my head is the Rick James quotes. And I was thinking that I'm Rick James, bitch. So now you need to say, Rick, your T-shirt needs to say something like, Rick James said this to me. And then, like, put on these quotes.
He would scream out my name any place he saw me. And it was so funny. He was so loud. But he was so, but he had such a, he was so charismatic.
What was one of your favorite moments kind of working on set?
Well,
behind the scenes,
there was a few. One of them was working with Vanity.
Yes,
you know. The other was Julius Carey, and you know, the other one was Leo, who played my little brother. Of course, Julius and Leo passed away.
Yeah.
I mean, there were the Italian guys. Offset, they were cracking me up because they didn't like one of the guys. I'm not going to say who it was. Not one of the actors, but behind the camera. But the Italian guys, the guys who were Eddie Arcadian's henchmen, they would like, "Yo, Timok, he's a peckerhead, isn't he? He's a peckerhead." They would like speak like Guidos, and it was so funny. Oh, man. We were just laughing all the time.
And you and Vanity seem to have a lot of chemistry on the screen. Was there any maybe romantic things going on off the screen as well?
You know she's a preacher now.
She is. I'm actually Facebook friends with her. Yes. I met her, and she became a Facebook friend after that. She's really was a beautiful woman then and is just as beautiful now.
What does she say when she Facebooks you?
She sends just different
things
about life and those type of things.
So I said, give Timok a call, not a text.
I would definitely say that.
Not a text.
A phone call.
Well, all right. So you had a lot of fun memories, but what was something that you were a new actor going into this, and as a martial artist, what did you learn from the movie?
Well, from the movie,
from working on set with other actors, martial artists.
I learned that it's just crazy. I didn't learn anything. It was just crazy. Mm-hmm. It's like it's too much going on. You're too young. But what I learned, I read there was Elia Kazan was one of the top filmmakers back in the day on the waterfront. You know, he worked with James Dean and all these. He made these guys stars. You know, Marlon Brando, and he wrote a really thick book, and it was his life. And he said, the most important thing in the industry is not so much that the talent, because I was focused on, I was going to acting classes, acting coaches, and I was looking at becoming a better actor all the time. And but he said, it's really a community, so you have to learn how to be with people.
Yeah.
And that always stuck in my head, And there's some people that it is very difficult to be with. I might have been one of them, but and there are people that are
great.
Were
there some on set that you had?
Well, there's just that's just the way it is on every set. There's, it's rarely that you go on a set and everybody's even keeled. Everybody has their needs and wants and desires, and it's a very passionate, art, filmmaking. So, and I have no problem with it. Someone's screaming at me and all that. And in New York, a lot of in the theater, a lot of people will be screaming at each other, and they'd be like, "Okay, now let's go rehearse."
Yeah.
Where someplace else, like, "Oh my God, did you hear it? You call him an a-hole. Oh my God." That was like the West Coast and East Coast. Mm-hmm. The East Coast, like, "Listen, you effing a-hole. You did that scene three times." And then you come to LA, like, "Jesus, don't you ever,
We're going to file papers."
But that's basically what I learned is, that kind of connects with martial arts. It's like, being with me, being with you is, you got martial arts. It's really about being with your community and other martial artists. So you have to learn how to be with people.
And then Leo O'Brien, who played your little brother Richie, as we mentioned, he passed away last year. Mm-hmm. Had you guys stayed in contact with each other through the years?
Yeah, that was a tough one for me. They were both tough, but that one was really tough because he got shot in Harlem about a year and a half before he died, and that's kind of he was always, of course, younger than me, so we weren't on the same page. But when I heard that he got shot, I went and visited him, and he was so happy, and I was happy to see him, and he jumped out of the bed. There was blood coming out of from the staples in his belly. He's like, "Oh, you want some water? I get some water." And I was like, "Leo, what are you doing?" I actually took my camera out, took a picture of him walking down there the hallway, I said, "Leo, just get your butt back in bed," you know. And then I was writing a film, and I said, "Let's rehearse some scenes because I want to write you in it," you know. And he just, as soon as we were rehearsing, he still had that same charisma. It was like he'd been acting ever since. You know, he's just natural.
He had the gift.
Someone say something, he'd come right back, and he'd look back, he just was natural. Then he passed away, and I heard about that from his son, and it was just very touching. But, life is about death and life and life and death. So, yeah. And it moves on. It's always flowing. It's cool.
It is, yeah. But he was a great
talent.
You take
the great stuff.
You take the great stuff. Now, there's rumors that there is a remake being scheduled for The Last Dragon.
Don't you know by now? Everybody asks that question for the past. It's been since 2008.
Yeah, they say everybody
should
Jackson,
know right now. Should know right now that nothing's happened yet.
No.
And do you think it's going to happen?
What do I know?
Would you like it to happen?
I don't really care, to tell you the truth. I'm too busy having a good time.
I hear that.
And I'm having a great time.
If it does happen, would you want to be involved?
That's like saying, if you meet, it's like, who knows? You know, you come to a place where, you know, money isn't your God, fame isn't your God.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, you come to that place and it's just like, let's just have fun.
Yeah.
You know, and if you can have, if it's fun and you can make some money too, then I'm all about it, you know? You know, the movie won't be perfect. It wouldn't be perfect because you're doing a remake. No, it's just saying it's a perfect remake because it's like, you know, you make a great, amazing meal like it's the best meal ever, and then you try to duplicate that same exact meal. It's not going to happen. Yeah. But you can make another meal and have it be great. So that's basically the way I look at it.
Well, I'm sure a lot of fans would be happy to see it and see you in it.
And a lot of fans would not like to see it too, because they're so stuck on the
original, right?
But if,
and we
like
are in a place of where people mess up remakes,
right?
You know,
right. So
yeah.
If they, you know, Devon Franklin is the guy in charge on that project over at Sony, and his wife, the actress,
Megan Good,
you know, she's talented, and you know, she's doing her thing. He always said he wants to do that, so you know, it's up to him really to make that happen. You know, I'm an actor; I'm not the person that owns the rights of that film.
Yeah.
It might happen. I mean, he seems like he has a good sense of integrity, you know, around that, wanting to do a good job.
You said something about writing a script. When did you start getting into that side of the entertainment?
People say I have talent in writing, but I personally do not like to write. I like to act and direct and things like that. But it's more of a chore to me to be in front of a computer, mm-hmm. you know. I like being with people and that type of thing. But I was writing poetry many years ago, and then I did a draft of a sequel to The Last Dragon about 15 years ago. And then me and another writer worked on a treatment for another upgrade. It's like a reboot of The Last Dragon just a year ago. And I wrote two scripts not too long ago. One is a superhero character called The Professor, and that's an action film. The other one's a detective story called I've Seen Things.
Really?
Yeah. So, and I got my agent, Lene Bell, and Sheila Leggett over at Media Artists Group, and they're working with me getting that out there.
So have you found kind of a niche for it in which you don't look at it as a chore anymore? Like it's kind
no,
of...
No, it's still a chore.
Yeah.
You know, it's still a chore. I mean, because it's 100-something pages. If it was poetry, you get over, you get everything out. And then it's there. Okay, it's like a page or maybe a couple of pages, the most of poetry, whatever, and it's done, you know. But with a film script, it's not. It's 100-plus pages, you know. So, you know, I don't get writer's block because I don't try to control where the story's going. You know, there's a framework which I work from, and it has to do with a beginning, middle, and end, and it's pretty much the formula of all scripts. However, I make the characters multidimensional, and that's my training that I got from Richard Lawson and Jeffrey Tambor, and of course the late great Milton Caselas at the Beverly Hills Playhouse. You know, they really were great at working on developing your character. So that's, I take my acting experience and put it into the writing. And then one of the keys is, for me, is, you know, I heard one director say once, you know, he said, you know, if you make a movie and you're going to write a movie, don't make it good. Make sure you write a great movie.
Yeah.
So when I thought about that, I said, okay, so, you know, what would it be great? And then when people read it and they say, well, that's great, then, you know, just because you think it's great. I'm a great dancer. Yeah, right. And then you look at them, who's dancing? Jesus.
So there's already, so there's talk about a Last Dragon sequel, and you already have a script for it, so
maybe merge them together. Yeah, that sounds like
lots of people have said it's
Steven
great.
Spielberg,
right? Exactly, Steven. If you're
George
listening,
George Lucas. Who else is out there?
We could throw Quentin Tarantino. Throw a little
Tarantino.
Twist. On the Last
Tarantino.
Dragon.
Tarantino, he's the man. Tarantino's the man.
And so, okay, you work with Vanity, but you've also worked with Janet Jackson.
Let's wait a while.
Yeah, she was the guy who made her Let's Wait a While.
Tell us about that experience.
Wait a long while.
I don't think Janet's waiting anymore.
I don't know. I haven't seen Janet in a long time. I wish her all the best.
How did you get involved with that project?
You know, I met Janet when she was young, and you know, she actually saw me in a parking lot, and she was like, mm-mm-mm. And actually, but I heard it, but she didn't think I heard it. And then there was a guy named Sparky. What was his name? He was working at Motown. He was like a gay guy. He was like, Timon, Janet wants to speak to you. And I was like, oh, you know, whatever. It was cool, you know. You know, it's like your ego is like, oh, well, Janet likes me. And then years went by because she was married, you know. And an opportunity came up where she had a video, and she wanted me to play her boyfriend in it. And that was Let's Wait a While.
Now, is she as shy as she appeared during that time?
Why don't you ask her?
Say, I'm going to have her on the show, and I'm going to ask her.
Say, Janet, are you as shy as you appear? She might put you up on that table. Watch out.
Hey, listen, it's BHL. Anything. We're open to anything at BHL.
BHL, baby.
BHL, baby.
Keep it real.
You just put a big smile on my face. I just say, I got all
these
visions.
We don't have to be in Europe, freaky.
Black blushing right now.
I know, black blushing. I like that, black blushing. You've also worked with Madonna.
Right.
And was it on her
Drowned
tour?
World Tour. I choreographed a number on her doing martial arts.
And how was that experience working on the tour?
It was great. She's a very hard worker, you know.
Yes.
So it was like, you know, you have her do. She was a dancer, so she knew that things took, you know, practice, you know. So that was cool. I introduced her husband to martial arts. He's actually pretty advanced now in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu.
So is that Guy Ritchie?
Guy Ritchie, okay. Yeah. I brought him over to my friend's studio, the Jiu-Jitsu school in Beverly Hills Jiu-Jitsu Academy on Robertson. Marcos Vinicius, wonderful Ooh. Guy. And he was like, oh, wow. Guy Ritchie was like, wow, this is good, wow. Boy, this is just amazing, mate. And I said, yeah, well, you should stick around. He might teach you something. And he goes, oh, I might just do that. And he hasn't stopped since. It's been like over 10 years.
Wow.
And that's such a different side of the business. I mean, martial arts is one thing, but then like kind of that dance choreography is different. Is there one that...
Well, I was doing martial arts.
Oh, you're still doing martial arts.
That was the martial arts number. I did the number Sky Fits Heaven with Madonna.
Okay. And is that a challenge for you to kind of transition from actor to go to martial arts to...
No, it's like, you know, comb your hair, you brush your teeth. You know?
It's all in one.
Got it all.
Now, from The Last Dragon, you also had several different TV roles. You were on Different World, Third Watch, right. Beverly Hills 90210.
Debbie Allen.
And you worked with her a couple of times as well, right?
It's like bigger than life. Yeah. You know, that was interesting. Actually, Cree Summer and Sinbad hit me up on Twitter the other day, and I just spoke to Sinbad this morning from that show, actually. You know, we did the show.
Yeah.
It was great. Yeah, they were really cool.
And what was maybe one of your favorite sets to be on when you were doing television?
You know, there was some funny. I did a small thing on there was a bunch, but Malcolm Eddy was really funny because at that time, right before that, Eddie Griffin and Martin Lawrence, they were struggling comedians over at the Comedy Store. And they were fans of mine. They were like, Timok, Timok, you got to come see us, man. We're doing our thing. You got to come see us, man. And they were so funny. So, you know, I did a play with Martin and a bunch of other cats on La Cienega at a theater over here years ago. And I just would pick up Eddie because he didn't have a car at the time. And I came to pick him up one time. It was like, I don't remember, it was very, very late. And there was like two people sitting in front of the stage and just like this. And I saw the back of their heads just drink. They weren't laughing. But he was on his back with his feet in the air cracking up. That was funny, right? That was funny. He was cracking up, and these people just... He was amazing.
And then, that was part of the theater experience? Or the play?
Well, no, that was at the comedy show.
That was the comedy show.
But I don't know. I got lost. You remind me of what the hell was.
What were we talking about again? No, we were talking about the television shows that you appeared on. And you.
Right, well, I'm sorry. Yeah, I know. Yeah, it was some of the fun moments. Yeah, I'd have to think about that. I mean, there were so many, you know, there's so many talent. You know, when you're around a lot of talented people, and it's just, you know, you become a voyeur sometimes on a set. You're like, you're laughing at or being impressed by other people's talent.
And then you took on a different world. You kind of took on a very serious subject. You were played a date rapist. Mm-hmm. How did you kind of prepare for that role, which is such a heavy subject? And
Well, you know, Debbie Allen. You know, I talked to her, and then also, you know, I played this goody-goody character in The Last Dragon, and I was like, yeah, well, you know, let's shock the audience, shock these fans a bit. And now I think of it, I shouldn't have did that because they became so close and so warm to Bruce Leroy that, you know, you don't want to break that image. So in the future, I wouldn't do something like that. But, you know, I was saying I want to do acting roles. I want to act, you know, It's about the money. You know, it's about being that great actor. So, you know, I just wanted to show I could do that guy. You know, so that was cool.
Is there a role that you would like to kind of take on that you haven't?
I like these warrior roles because I feel like I'm a warrior.
Like 300 kind
of
warrior?
Yeah, yeah, something like that, you know, where you're bleeding and there's no water and, you know.
But they need to catch a new season of Game of Thrones.
And your woman is like back at the castle, and there's a guy that wants to get with her, and you want to get back there, but there's no water.
All right, so you got it, warrior.
We're putting out in the universe.
There's some eagle biting your leg, and you know, and you're like kicking him, and you're like, I'm going to get back to my woman. And then there's a guy with a mustache out there with your woman. And you're like, But yeah, I'd love to do something like that.
Note to self once again, do not fight this man.
I'm a lover.
In the alley, go the opposite direction.
I only enjoy fighting in competition, not real life. I only fight when, you know, when your family's being attacked or you're being attacked. Otherwise, you know, there's no reason to fight.
Yeah. Well, you know, we've kind of talked about your movie side of things. We've gone a little bit of television, and now I also know that you were heavily into plays. So you did the Roadhouse, the comedy, and which was a kind of a comedic version of Patrick Swayze's Roadhouse, and then also Cheaters, which had a pretty star-studded ensemble as well.
Right. I love theater because you get immediate reaction, you know. So it's like, you know, it's different, you know. With a film, you got to wait for it to come out. But with theater, you know, it's when you can embrace uncertainty, then you can have fun.
Yeah.
If you can't embrace uncertainty, you become limited as an actor in the stage because, you know, things always go wrong. And sometimes more experienced actors in theater, they'll make things go wrong just to throw you because you're too on point.
Yeah.
And when you're too on point, you become predictable and the audience knows what's going to happen. When you don't know what's going to happen, that's what you're supposed to be doing as an actor anyway, then the audience is going on a ride because they don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah,
you know, so that's what I love about acting in general, but especially in theater, you have the opportunity not to know, and you know, if there's supposed to be a couch on the set, and the guys were drunk from the other night, and they didn't bring the couch on the set, and you go, aren't I supposed to sit on the couch and eat? I guess I'm gonna eat this 3-course meal on the floor, whatever, 12-course meal. Yeah, so you know, when you can embrace it and be light with it. Then you can, and then you get really confident as an actor when you do stage.
That's what they say. They say theater is one of the best training for any actor, no matter.
It's confidence.
It's the confidence, and I also would assume that it also has to be a little scary because it's different from being on a set where if you need to do a retake, you can do it. Mm-hmm. Where if you're live theater and you mess up, right. you're vulnerable to everybody.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Was
yeah.
that something that you felt or you just were pretty confident with it? You're like,
after doing like a bunch of plays, then you start realizing, okay, things go wrong. You can't go nuts. You can't leave the stage and all the people looking, where'd the actor go? Yeah. So that's where your confidence gets, you know. You actually find them as gifts.
Yeah.
You know, something goes wrong, like I said, the couch isn't on the stage. You end up doing something on the floor, and then it takes a new life, you know, because that's the thing. You know, the audience, you know, and that's where the creativity comes in. You start just having the confidence that everything will work out because you know your role, and the other actor knows their role.
Would you like to direct a play as well?
I've directed some one acts. I haven't directed a full-length play, but I'd love to, you know. I love to. You know, you let actors have a ball. You know.
Yeah. And is it enjoyable for you to be on the kind of the opposite side? You know, as an actor, obviously you're kind of taking the notes from the director and from the script. But is it more fulfilling for you to come on the other side of the
I like both. You know, I like both. It's just a creative process, and you know, when you're on the other side, not in front of the camera or on stage, when you're there, it's like you're the vegetables and the soup.
Yeah.
You're not the cook. When you're the cook, you can actually look and enjoy it, you know, and eat it up and laugh. And but when you're doing it, you can't see it at the same time.
Yeah.
So that's the only thing. Like whenever I've done anything, I've always said, man, I wish I was sitting in the audience seeing this because everybody else is enjoying it. You know? I mean, I enjoy it, but, you know, if you're playing a dramatic role, you're not enjoying it. Right. There's times that you're like crying, you know. Yeah.
And then there was a period that you kind of took a little bit of time off from Hollywood, it seems like.
Yeah.
And what were you doing during that time period? What were your fans
like recuperating?
Waiting to hear from you?
I was in rehabilitation, brain damage.
Oh.
Yeah, man. And Hollywood is a trip. You live here.
Yeah, it is.
Come on, give me a break. Come on. You got all kinds of sharks out here.
That is definitely true.
And then to move from that to 2010, you know, being inducted to the Martial Arts Hall of Fame, what is that like? How do you stay so grounded as far as kind of being swooped and, you know, you took this path of martial arts and where it has kind of led you?
Yeah.
What keeps you grounded?
Well, you know, you are the responsibility for your own groundedness, not anybody else, you know? You know, you talk about all these big stars and say, it's the people around them. It's you. Now, I can understand someone that is very, very young. But at some point, you know, in life, even if you grew up around it and you know that you have to stop doing certain things. You know?
That's true.
So, you know, basically everybody knows, you know, when they're being a little too much. You know, you walk in and, you know, someone is set and maybe the PA made a mistake and gave you the wrong, you know, cup of coffee and you were supposed to get tea and then you give them an ugly look. Why give them an ugly look? To say, hey, man, I don't like coffee. I like tea. Right. Now give me some tea. And he goes, I'm sorry. You know, and then you say, I'm just kidding. And then he laughs and you make him feel relaxed, you know, rather than giving him a hard time, you know, because he made a mistake, you know. So it's just, you know, it's common sense, you know. Look at the things happening in the world. Look at in the Philippines.
Yeah,
you know?
It's craziness.
Anything could happen. Look, I was in New York. They had the Sandy. Anything could happen to anybody. Yeah. Look at the Madoff. He made off with the maid people's money. You know, so you know, don't think your high horse can be always kicked down in a blow of the wind. Anything could happen. That's just that common sense, you know.
How did you celebrate being inducted?
Oh yeah, that was more like wow, that like feels good. It's like wow. And then like I was saying this past weekend at the expo, the other weekend, you know, being in honored at that place. That you know, I feel really young. I feel like I'm 25 years old, honestly. But you know, so it's kind of surreal, you know, when people say, "Oh man, you're a legend." And you know, the people that come up to me looking older than me say, "Man, I was a kid when I saw your movie, and I'm watching, and my kids are watching your movie." So I'm like, you know, so it's kind of a surreal feeling. It's like a dream. Mm-hmm. It doesn't even seems. It doesn't. It's like a really like a dream, cool. And it feels good, you know.
Now you've been you are a teacher, you're a trainer, you've accomplished so many things. You had a fitness DVDs out. What else Do you have something on your bucket list that you'd like to accomplish by the time you're 50 that you haven't done yet, or something that's major in your life?
Yeah, there's a couple of things. One is I started working on a book, and then, you know, that takes more discipline than that, because I'm doing so many other things. And the other, obviously, I want to make another incredible movie, so I'm working on that. I've started working on something that I think a lot of people are going to benefit from, and I started working with young people years ago, and that was a dream program. And then I started doing research on vision boards and things like that, and I found something that I'm creating right now, and it's a dream tool, and it has to do with it's almost like meditating and envisioning, but I'm going to patent it first and then I'm going to put it out, but it's basically a way for you to achieve your dreams by seeing your dream every day, you know. But it's not that simple, because you have to be coached for the first beginning sessions on your true, because there's so much stuff on top of your true essence. You know, your parents, you're still trying to be a certain way for your parents, or for, you know, there's all kinds of things. You know, I'm trying to be because I'm American, or I'm Christian, or I'm gay, or I'm straight. You know, all this fake stuff. Yeah, everybody's trying to fit in, then that's not who they really are, you know? So before they create their dream, they have to know who they are and what their essence is. You know, it doesn't just happen by going to church, or it could happen, but that doesn't just happen. You have to really be questioned by someone that's going to be brutally honest with you, to be brutally honest with yourself, you know? And but that's what I'm working on, you know, and that I want to finish soon.
Was there someone that did that for you, who was sort of there and was brutally honest with you and made you sort of
You know, I took some seminars at Landmark Education, and that was pretty revealing. I've studied some books with Anthony Robbins. I've studied all kinds of books and, you know, and certain people, you know. When you date a woman that's strong, I like dating strong women. Damn. And they, you know, sometimes, and you know, they're not puppets. They're like, yeah, but you do this, you know. Yeah. You know the thing you do that too, you know. And you keep doing that, and you know, see what happens, you know. And you're like, yeah, right, yeah, sure. And you're like, yeah, she's right. Yo, yeah. You know, I better change that. That's true. You know, that's basically what it is, you know. You know, the people around you that really love you, they'll tell you who you are.
Yeah,
and
that's true.
It's the degree good friends, that you... Will. You know, to the degree that you hear it. Now, it could be a side of you that isn't actually you, but you develop that out of that habit. You know, who you really are is not that person, but you develop that, you know, could be like cursing people out. That's not you, but that's a bad habit. Mm-hmm. You know, and people say, you know, you shouldn't do that. Then you have a habit that you know you shouldn't do, but you got to stop it. You know, you'll be cursing everybody out. Sometimes you're cursing the wrong people out, you know.
And after your 20 to 30-year career, what one word would you say defines you?
Love. I'd say love. Because I have a lot, you know, I have a lot of love for a lot of people, and I have a lot of love for my fans, and they have a lot of love for me.
Yeah.
So, and that's been my juice in life, is to have that at every turn. You know, when people see me because of this movie, you know, people say, don't you get sick of being typecast or known for that? I say, no, man, because imagine... You know, I had just last weekend a little 5-year-old, beautiful little girl, little white girl, that was wearing the Shonoff outfit. And her father had her on YouTube, and she said, "Am I the meanest?" And he said, "Shonoff." She said, "Am I the prettiest?" And he said, "Shonoff." And she said, a bunch of those. And then she said, she put a little glass down. She said, "I can't hear you." She said, "The show got her off." You know, and then they
that's
came.
That's gotta feel amazing.
Then they
just
came
know.
To see me. They sent the video. Yeah. Then they came to see me at a signing, and I took a picture of this little cutie pie. And I was like, "Man, this kid's gonna grow up." You know, and they're gonna show their kids, and it's amazing. For the rest of my life, you know, I'm gonna have that type of love coming my way. You know,
that
no matter
in
what,
history.
Even if there's another movie I'm doing and it's great or better or whatever than that one, it just they're just gonna, you know, love it. You know, that's what's great. That's like someone
it
like Robert De Niro. You know, Al Pacino. They got Scarface. They got a couple of movies that people always are like, yeah, yeah. You know,
those
you
are
know.
The ones. Those,
you know,
Yeah. Say hello to my little friend. Right. You know? It's like, yeah.
You know? De Niro, you know? It's like, you know, or Jack Nicholson, any of these guys.
Yeah, you had that moment in history. A lot of people don't get it. So to have that, it's got to be an unbelievable feeling, too.
Yeah.
To know that people appreciate your work.
Yeah, they just, it's like, it's love. It's, whether they know who I am, they still, you know, on some level, that character was me.
Yeah. You know? And then you have a big event coming up, the pro wrestling event that fans need to know about. You need to promote
There's a guy going around saying he's Shonuff. And Shonuff is, you know, Julius Carey, a great actor, has passed away, and he already gave it all out there, did an incredible role playing Shonuff. So this character is going around wrestling as Shonuff, and he's calling me out.
Oh.
Okay. Uh-oh, I see really? The moves.
So we're going to have to get busy this Saturday in Simi Valley, yeah.
And now how can fans find out and go? Would it go online or what's it entitled?
VendettaPro.com, Vendetta. And you can go to my Facebook page, facebook.com/ I am Taimak, TAIMAK, IAMTAIMAK. You can find me there on Facebook or Twitter, I am Taimak, Instagram/ I am Taimak, and it's all there. You'll see. It's this Saturday, the 23rd. In Simi Valley, California.
So that's a go-to right there.
I have to see that.
Yeah, I was like, I think I might have to, I might have to check that out.
Drop kicking, spinning, yeah. Smacking.
You got to do the signature moves. I'm going to go check it out. Now, we got five more little questions for you here that we'll let Jesse and Courtney ask you.
What's one of your most embarrassing moments that has just kind of always stuck out to you?
Oh, God. Yeah, probably many, but I got to think of one. Oh, boy. Oh, there's some I can't say. It's too embarrassing. Yeah, that's a tough one. I have to think about that.
Okay. Let's go to do you know the drama that's been going on with TLC and Pebbles?
No.
L.A. Reid. Okay, well, we'll skip over that one.
Well, I know Chili. I know her.
Oh, okay.
Yes. Yeah,
she's a big martial arts wrestling fan, actually.
Oh, okay.
I didn't know if that's how you knew her.
Yeah, no, I mean, she remembers me from The Last Dragon. That's how I initially met her. But, yeah, I haven't been talking to her in a while, but, no, anyway. Let's hope they work it out.
So, what is a hidden talent that you have that maybe we don't know?
I'd say, let me think. Oh, I did my apartment. I did all the tiles in my apartment and the marble in my bathroom, and I built a kitchen. And I never did that before, and I did a good job. So,
nice. That's
hey. Right. Do you take requests as
no.
well?
I was like, no.
I have a couple things I upgraded myself
my
that I'm not going to touch. So,
do you know how to fix a headlight on a car?
Right.
That's true.
Okay, and moving forward, writing movies and wanting to do more film. Who is one actor or actress that you would like to work with?
Gary Oldman.
Oh, he's a great one.
Yeah.
He's one of my
favorites. Good one.
What's your favorite Gary Oldman film?
I have so many, you know. Let's say there's so many. You know, I was really moved how brilliant he was in Immortal Beloved.
Oh, yeah.
The Beethoven story.
Yeah.
But then he's got so many performances. Dracula, you know, The Fifth Element, True Romance.
True Romance.
Goes on and on.
Still
on.
Classic, yeah.
You know? I mean, he's like Brando in that. He doesn't have to say anything. He just looks, and you get it all. You know, that's what That's what they say, that acting is between the lines.
Yeah,
it's not on the line, and that's what he does. It's like, I mean, there's many great actors, but I love to work with him.
Cool. And last but not least, what's the craziest thing you've ever read about yourself since you've been in the public eye?
Then I'm gay. That's not true, because I love women, baby. I love women, baby.
He got up in seat for that one. There you have it. Yeah. So if you heard any rumors, he just cleared it up for you.
It's all good.
Now, could you give, I know you gave this a little bit earlier, but could you give your Twitter and your Facebook and your Instagram for the fans again?
Yeah, it's facebook.com/ I am Taimak, IAMTAIMAK. And same thing with Twitter, same thing with Instagram/ I am Taimak.
Well, thank you for joining us today. And fans, make sure you go check out his pro wrestling event, because we want to see him kick some butt.
Thanks, just going to VendettaPro.com.
VendettaPro.com.
And, things are going to get better and better for all of us. You know, we just got to keep on dreaming and keep on believing that anything is possible, even the thing you think is not possible is possible. So,
I like that. That needs to be on that T-shirt as well, with the Rick James.
I'm working on a T-shirt. I'm telling you. Rick James.
Time
off.
Courtney, where can the fans find you?
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram as Stuart Starlet.
Jesse.
At DJ Jesse J.
And you can find me at Daryl Kristen on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. Thank you guys for joining us today. We had our very special guest, Taimok the Man, who gave us a full explanation of everything he's been working on lately. Be sure to check out his site and all of his information, and go check out his event as well. And we'll see you next time on Portraits.
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, Daryl Kristen, and the entire BHL staff, we would like to thank you for tuning in to the Black Hollywood Live Network. If you have questions or comments, tweet us at BHL Online or email us at info@blackhollywoodlive.com. For more exclusive content, visit blackhollywoodlive.com. This has been a presentation of the Black Hollywood Live Network.
Hollywood redefined.
The views expressed here are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of BHL or its owners or principals.